Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Dollars and Cents Show. This is Carol Topp, your host. And this episode and the next, so the next two episodes are going to be parts of a presentation I did at the Business of Writing International Summit in Louisville, Kentucky. The topic is going to be business tips for writers, authors, and self-publishers. But you can be any kind of business owner and benefit from some of the information I share in these next two podcasts, because I'm going to be talking about business structures, LLC status, whether you should be a hobby or business, general things about startup expenses, doing business as fictitious names, and things like that. So I hope you enjoyed this first episode. The second one will follow in the next episode of the Dollars and Cents Show. And I hope you learn a lot and be very successful at whatever business you're starting, but especially if you're a writer or self-publisher.
Welcome to the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with your host, accountant and author Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA. Join Carol as she shares her knowledge on a topic of interest to everyone, money. On the show, Carol will discuss starting and running a microbusiness, teaching your kids about money, and managing money in a homeschool organization. Carol takes confusing topics such as money and business and puts them into clear English. She's ready to share her knowledge with you on today's show.
Well, welcome, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to come to hear about business tips for writers, authors, and self-publishers. My name is Carol Topp. I am a certified public accountant, a CPA, so I hopefully know a little bit about business. And I'm also a published author. I've published 10 books. This workshop is taken from is this one called Business Tips and Taxes for Writers. You can take a look at that and look at the table of contents if you're interested. Another series I wrote is called Micro Business for Teens, which is basically trying to help teenagers start their own businesses. So everything I write really has somehow to do with using my accounting knowledge to help writers, authors. Could you close the door, please? So we're not getting distracted there. Run your businesses better. And because I am an author, I understand where you guys are coming from. I was actually asked to write this book. Not happen very often, does it, that you get asked to write a book? So the publisher is a small press in Florida. She wrote the first book in this series called Information in a Nutshell. Her book is called Writing and Publishing. And then she asked me to follow up on this book, Business Tips and Taxes for Writers, which is kind of the next step. Now that you've written and published, here's the business aspects to it all. All right? Plenty of time for questions as we go along, and obviously at the end if you like. I was at my writer's group, like a critique group, about a year ago, and we read a chapter. There's some handouts there when you come in. I was reading a chapter in this book about corporations. And one of the new members in my writer's critique group said to me, "Oh, Carol, I'm a corporation. I'm a corporation." And I thought that was a little odd because she had already said she was a first-time author. She was self-publishing a memoir. And to a CPA, when you hear that someone who is self, you look at your face, you're like me, self-published a memoir, they don't typically sell extremely well, right? Why is she going to the complication of being a corporation? And she says to me, "It's what my lawyer and CPA set up to me." Now I'm thinking, oh my gosh, these people have led her down an extremely complex path that she does not need to go down, and probably charged her a lot of money for it too, and we're not even sure if she's going to cover her expenses, right? So now I'm getting really concerned that this woman's been taken by a lawyer, but a person from my profession as well, her CPA. So I get talking to her and asking a few more questions, and it turns out she says, "Oh, they set me up as an LLC. You heard that term, LLC? Do you know what it stands for? Limited liability. That's what she thought, corporation, and it's not, Patricia. The C actually is the word company. She confused. Now, we're word people, and we should be picky about the words we use and understand them. She misunderstood the LLC status to be corporate status, and it really just means company. So I'm going to explain in pictures what what it looks like, these different business structures, so you understand what she misunderstood, okay? And these word pictures will help. And I came up with this after I wrote the book. So you're getting something that's not in the book. Don't you hate that when you're like, darn, I wish I put that in the book. Okay, we've got some word pictures. If you called the IRS and said, I'm forming a business, they'd say, in the United States, there are three forms of business. There's a fourth one that I work with a lot. It's called not-for-profits. We're not talking about those. We're here as the business of writing, so we're for-profits. You've got the sole proprietorship, which is like your single-family home. One family in the house, and we kind of understand that model. That's easy. That's the mom-and-pop businesses out there. You know, 90% of, oh, I think 80% of all businesses are sole proprietors. Probably 99% of authors are sole proprietors. Okay? We get that. Single-family home. A partnership, oh, I'm sorry, I wonder if we can we adjust that? You can't see the top with a screen or something? Yay, thank you. That worked. Just get a, I was going to do it electronically, and you just did it.
Well,
that's good.
It's stay here and hold it.
No, I think you're good. You're good. But you'll be crouched down. Like, a partnership is like a duplex. Now, in general, I discourage my business clients from forming partnerships. It's just like living in a duplex, a little too close for comfort, right? Partnerships, I say, are like being married, but you're not in love. Because that partner can obligate you to debts that you have to pay for. So partnerships, unless you're a professional like lawyers or doctors organizations and you have a written agreement and you spell it all out, don't form a partnership. If you're going to co-author a book with somebody, you each have your own individual businesses. Do not commingle your businesses with a partnership. It's just like living in a duplex. You really don't want to do that if you don't have to. The final form of business in the United States for profits is a corporation, and that's like an apartment building. Lots of people. Corporations have shareholders, lots of owners, lots of people. This is where we as authors rarely go, rarely. Maybe if you're forming a publishing company, and you're publishing other people, you might want to consider this status. But normally, and they come in two forms, S and C, these are parts of the IRS code. S is just part of the IRS code, but you might want to think of it as small, S for small, and it is. You're limited to 75 shareholders, and mostly small corporations go with S. You might want to consider that if you are publishing other people, and then you have a corporate status. There's some advantages to it, but it's kind of down the line, down the road. All right, so you get it? Single family homes, partnerships, corporations. Now, let me show you a picture of what an LLC is. It's like this. A limited liability company status is like a fence around your sole proprietorship, your single family home. Or you could put a fence around your partnership, or you can put a fence around your corporation. It's like a form of protection. Okay. Limited. Limited, like a fence, will protect or limit, right, access to your property. Liability, when you hear the word liability in business, think lawsuit. And think the money from someone suing you that they might want. That's what liability means, okay? So what an LLC company status does is limits the liability to your sole proprietorship. And that means that whoever's suing you can't get your personal assets, like your retirement account, your kids' college fund, stuff like that. Your house, yeah. This is represents your business, not your personal house. Yeah, go ahead.
My husband owns his own business, and he's incorporated, but I don't
think... So he's an apartment. LLC. He's an apartment building.
Okay.
Right? You say he's incorporated. That's the apartment building. He's an apartment building. You know what I mean? My picture. Okay. Usually, corporation status was the only way you got that fence, that limited liability. In about the 1980s, this became limited liability company status became very popular, and finally, we as sole proprietors could get this fence built around our businesses, this limited liability applied to our businesses. So my business, Carol Top CPA, is a sole proprietorship. I'm the only owner, single family home. Got it? I built a fence called limited liability company status around my sole proprietorship. So if you sue me, All you get is what the business has, which is the money in my checking account, my computer, and my printer. That's it. That's all you can get. He doesn't need LLC status on top of his corporate status, because corporate status already limits the liability. That's why he formed a corporation, to the corporation. So somebody sues him, and they can only get the corporate assets, not his personal. Make sense? Okay. Does this help? Does anybody have LLC status on your sole proprietorships? Are you sole proprietorship, Brian? Are you a corporation? Sole proprietorship with an LLC? So you went from the apartment, because it's overly complex, down to the single family home? Yeah, because I assume because it was overly complex to have corporate structure. Yeah, we CPAs charge a lot more money for the corporate tax return. But Mark Adams is a corporation, S-Corp?
Right.
S-Corp.
Yeah,
see, and now you have to do certain things. This is what that article, which we're not going to go into, talks about the things you need to do to protect that fence so you don't poke a hole in that fence. And one of the things is you sign contracts in the name of the LLC. And you just, you know, my name and my LLC have a very similar name, Carol Top CPA LLC. You impressed? So cool. That's how I will sign contracts. So that's what I wanted to illustrate, what that LLC status gets you. This is granted by your state. In the state of Ohio, I think I paid $150, one very simple form. You may want a lawyer if you have some more complex arrangement. Okay? You may want to consult with a lawyer, but a lot of times it's really a good idea to consult with a lawyer and a CPA because we understand different aspects of it. This does not change your tax structure at all. You file the same tax forms. If you call the IRS and said, I'm an LLC, what tax form do I file? You know what the IRS would say to you? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't understand LLCs. I mean, they do. But they call them disregarded entities, meaning the IRS doesn't care about the fact that you're an LLC. That's a legal protection, not a tax status. So, Brian, when you tell me I'm an LLC, I'm going to say, as a tax CPA person, I don't know what that means. You have to tell me if you're sole proprietorship, partnership, or corporation, then I understand what tax structure you are. Got that? Yes, you understand a lot more than some people do. That article, like I told you, is, I believe, in this guide to self-publishing, which is right here. Okay, I talked to you the other day, the other workshop, about hobby writing. Hobby writing is like living in your car. Very undesirable. Does anybody remember, anybody in my tax workshop? Why is being a hobby writer very undesirable? Do you remember? Yeah. That's right. But is hobby income taxable income? Is it reportable?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Unfortunately, the IRS, basically the IRS says everything is taxable unless we tell you it's not. And a few things are not. Gifts are not taxable. Sometimes inheritances, sometimes this are not taxable. That's about it. Gifts and inheritance. Life insurance proceeds are not taxable. Just about everything else is. Oh, sorry, I keep thinking of more things. Tax-exempt interest income is not taxable. But anyway, hobby income is taxable, but rarely in real life can the expenses of your hobby, and if your hobby's writing, you might have some expenses, very rarely in real life are they deductible on your tax return. In theory, in the law, they are, but the actual real practice is you have to put it on your itemized deductions. If you don't itemize, you don't get to write it off. Subject to what's called a 2% adjusted gross income, meaning you have to get over 2% of your adjusted gross income, and then only those expenses can you deduct. And you're not getting it dollar for dollar. It's only a deduction against your taxable income. So in reality, hobby income is fully taxable, and rarely are the expenses deductible. It's like living in your car. Not a desirable position to be in. Oh, there, it's just in words what I just said to you. So I think it was Gertrude who's not here. Gertrude, yes, you asked me this question yesterday. She basically said, when am I in business? Gertrude's been starting to spend money in the pursuit of making a profit, in the pursuit of her business. And she's wanting to know, when do I start deducting these things? Because Gertrude's a little nervous, like we all are, I really don't want to put on my tax return these expenses without showing any income, because it looks a little fishy to the IRS, doesn't it? In my other workshop, I read you a true life tax court case about this man who deducted all these expenses for 8 years, mind you, 8 years, with no income from his book sales. So this is what I told Gertrude. You are in business when, obviously, a contract is signed. You have a book contract. How about your first book is sold? You actually got some income. That could be when you start in business. You could say, when I am paid, I am in business. Or here's one we don't think about but really applies to us as writers. Can you see it in blue there? You spend money in pursuit of a profit. And in the field of writing, we can spend money for several years before we see any income, right? Maybe never see income. So when are you in business? Any of those. You're in business before you make money. Well, I hope you're enjoying this episode of the Dollars and Cents Show and learning a lot about business tips, whether you're a writer, author, self-publisher, or any kind of business owner. Hey, the show notes to this podcast are available over at Dollars and Cents Show. Just look for this episode called Business Tips for Writers. And I think that might be helpful for you to follow along with some of the things that I'm referring to, especially because some of these come as pictures. So I'll make sure I put the PowerPoint slides up there for you so you can see as well as hear what the authors at that conference were learning about. Several times in the workshop, I mentioned my book, Business Tips and Taxes for Writers, and you can find that over at my website, taxesforwriters.com. It's a pretty short book. You'll be able to get through it pretty quickly, but it's chock full of great advice on the business of writing and also quite a few tax tips. Again, whether you're in a business of writing or self-publishing or really any kind of business, it's general advice that I think will be very helpful to you. So you can go find that over at taxesforwriters.com. Now let's finish up with another part of the presentation where I'm going to explain that statement I finished with. You're in business before you make money. That might have surprised you. It certainly surprised the people in the audience. So I hope you enjoy the rest of my presentation here on business tips for writers, authors, and self-publishers from the Business of Writing International Summit in Louisville, Kentucky. You're in business before you make money. Did you think about that? So I was at a writer's conference. I think I said this when we did my intro. And this person came up to me and said, well, Carol, I'll buy your book, Business Tips and Taxes for Writers, when I make money. Well, the problem is she was spending money because she was at a conference. She's in business before she makes any income or money. Yeah? Do you know that? You are. Can you take some tax deductions? Depends. This was what Gertrude and I are trying to figure out. When does she want to say her business starts? And it's kind of a conversation you want to have with a professional because there's a lot of questions, and it's not black and white in the tax code. You saw these different... The IRS seems to think that we all open a shop with a storefront, and the day you open the doors is the day you're in business, and business is not like that anymore. So it can be quite flexible the day you say you're starting a business. Probably most of you are already in business, but I just want you to think about that. What if you're a newbie author, or like Gertrude, spending money, years of expenses, but never claimed any of those expenses? Now what do? You can write them off, collect them up, write them off as startup expenses in the first year. This is what Gertrude and I were talking about, and you kind of thought that might be a good idea. Maybe in 2014 or 2015, she was thinking, I'm going to then say I'm in business, file my first tax return. As we got to thinking about it, I'm starting to tell her maybe 2014, because she's buying some computer equipment, and we're thinking maybe she needs to show that she's starting the business in 2014, because she really kind of is, and that she's spending money. In 2015, she's finally going to see some income from it. We hope. Any questions about that?
How far back can you go for startups?
The IRS is not specific.
Of course.
Which kind of gives us no guidance, which means I don't know what to tell you. But be reasonable. And also the IRS would say they want you to keep records what they call contemporaneously. So as you go along, keep records of, well, I went to conferences for 3 years. Look, I kept a log. I wrote down for these 3 years what date, where I went, what I spent. So keep some sort of log at each year as you go through and have these expenses. And then you can kind of accumulate them. Here's the way I look at expenses, okay? The only reason the IRS allows us to deduct expenses is because they think that expense is going to generate income someday that they can tax. That's the only reason they allow expenses. So when you're gonna start asking me about, is this deductible, blah, 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 I'm going to say, think like the IRS. I'll let you deduct that expense if someday it's going to produce income. And we should do that in our businesses anyway, right? You should look at every expense and say, will this return on investment? You talked about that in your workshop. I'm going to stop going to this event because it's not returning enough profit or enough investment for me. I'm going to do the same thing. So there are some things that are just not worth my money. They're not producing profit for me. The IRS thinks the same way. Okay? Good. Good thinking. Good. Here's some advice I give to all my business clients. Names and numbers. DBA and EIN. Have you heard those? DBA, doing business as. You might want a business name. A lot of times authors do not need a different business name. They can just use their name. So checks get written to their name, stuff like that. I have two DBAs. I need to get a third one. One is the name of my publishing company, Ambassador Publishing. So checks can be written to Ambassador Publishing, or checks can be written to Carol Topp, CPA. So I go into the bank with a check for in the name of two of my DBAs, and the bank teller's this very young kid. I mean, he's like in college. And he's looking at these checks I'm trying to deposit into my checking account, which is Carol Topp CPA LLC, and he says, what are these other businesses? And I said, it's my DBA. And that's a DBA. I'm like, oh dear, they've not trained him very well. I explain, it's my business licenses. These names are registered with the state, which is usually what you have to do. Go register your fictitious name with your state, or sometimes your county clerk. In Ohio, it's your state. Anybody know in Kentucky, is it at the county level or state level? Anybody have a DBA? Brian, you do. You operate under different businesses?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
State
level. Okay. Yeah, Secretary of State, that's pretty typical. And you pay a fee. Fine. Yeah. It kind of reserves your name, too, so nobody else can use it. So then he calls his manager over, and the manager starts telling me, oh, you need to have separate checking accounts for each of these different doing business as businesses, which is not true. So I pull out my CPA card, if you will, and I said, no, excuse me, I'm a CPA. I know that is not true. And you say it with enough confidence, and the bank manager goes, oh, okay. Now, she did ask that I bring in the paperwork from the state that shows it was registered. And I thought, you know what? Good for this teller. He was young, but good for him, because they probably should have asked for that 5 years ago when I started depositing checks in my fictitious business name into my business account. Right? They should have checked that a long time ago. So anyway, think about having a doing business as fictitious name registration so you can accept checks under your business name as well as your personal name. Also, please, please, please start using an employer identification number. This is a free number you get from IRS.gov. Yeah. Can you do a DBA as a corporation and as an S-Corp? It's automatic when you file your corporate paperwork. The first line you fill in is, what is the name of this corporation? It's kind of this. It's kind of the doing business as name registration at the same time. Now, if you have a corporate name, but you want to do business as different entities under, you know, doing business as, but here's my corporate name, but I do business as another name, then you have to file a fictitious name registration saying, I do business as this corporation, but I have three different names I do business as. Does that make sense? It's to protect us as citizens. So if we do business with this business here, and that's his name, I don't know who the owner is. I always want, the state helps us by saying, I always want to tie that back to who's the owner of that business, and it'll be a corporation, a partnership, or a sole proprietor. So, okay, make sense? Is that too much? Okay. It's a free, you get it for free. If you're a sole proprietor, you get one number, EIN number, for all the sole proprietorships you will ever open under all their different names. Okay, one number, just lots of different businesses you can start underneath that one EIN. You do this because you want to keep your Social Security number secret, private, because of identity theft. Okay, so you mentioned this real fast, Mark, and I don't know if anybody heard it, but when you have a contract with a school, you send them this form called a W-9, where they're going to say, basically, what's your legal name, what's your address, who do I make the check out to, and what I know you guys do is you give them your EIN number instead of your personal Social Security number, because you're trying to protect that. Identity theft is too rampant, so please go get that. IRS.gov, just type EIN in the box. Okay, it's also covered in my book, I'm sure. Okay, this bad boy, though, Kentucky. This is the Kentucky form. If you're selling books in Kentucky to be a vendor so you can collect sales tax, and you guys are probably nasty sales tax, and you're going to all different states and collecting sales tax. This is if you live in Kentucky, like this thing? Half of it's the instructions for about 7 or 8 pages. So I'm looking at this thing because I'm thinking, well, I'm going into Kentucky. I'm going to sell some books. Do I have to fill out 8 pages? And I think it's $50 to register as a business in the state of Kentucky. So I called them because I didn't want to do this. I'm glad I called the Kentucky Department of Revenue, and I said, I am a transient vendor. Sometimes they call it remote sales, meaning I'm only entering the state for a little while, a couple days. I'm going to make some sales. I know I have to collect Kentucky sales tax and pay Kentucky. And they were real nice about it. They said, no, you don't have to fill out this registration form. These are for Kentucky-based businesses. I told them I was in Ohio. I'm an Ohio-based business. And they said, we'll send you a form. So hopefully it's just a very simple form. It says, these were my sales. Here's the 6% I owe. Mail a check to Kentucky. But these are the kind of things you need to look into based on where you live. You might need to register your business. In Ohio, I did not have to do this, but Kentucky for some reason does, and they collect quite a bit of information. I was kind of disappointed. Okay? When you go into a state and you sell in that state, you do have to find out what their sales tax obligations are.
Thank you for joining the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with Carol Topp here at the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. For more helpful information, visit Carol at her website, homeschoolcpa.com.